So the last couple of days we've been speaking about various aspects of tefillah, and that's what we're going to continue with today as well. There's a pasuk in Parshas Yisro where the Torah warns us, Lo sa'asu niti, Elohei chesep, Elohei zahav, lo sa'asu lachem. So the simple understanding of the pasuk is obviously coming to warn us not to make an avodah zarah out of kesef or zahav. Lo sa'asu niti, don't make together with your relationship with me something else that will be made out of kesef or zahav. But Rabbeinu Bechaya writes there on the pasuk in Parshas Yisro, Lo sa'asu niti, he says, Kishatem omde b'tfila iti. When you are standing together in tefillah, when you are in supplication, when you are in a relationship with me, lo tachshavu b'kesef v'zav asher imachem. Don't use that time while you're in the middle of davening to think about your kesef, your zav, all your business affairs, all your occupations, all the things that you have to do. Don't think about the kesef v'zav in your life. When you're with me, when you're iti, it's time to be iti and iti alone. It's time to be only with me, and not engaged, not involved in anything else, even though it's only in your mind, even though it's only in your thought. She'em kein, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, because if your mind is somewhere else, not only E.T., ma'le ani aleichem ki'ilu asisem Elohei chesef ve'Elohei zahav. It is considered in my eyes like you have made for yourself an avodah zarah, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, because you're not understanding what tefillah is all about. You're not understanding what the relationship is meant to be, and therefore Rabbeinu Bechaya warns us that we should make sure not to have the kesef and the zav on our minds at the time that we are supposed to carve out a particular time only to be focused on the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. There's a famous legend, I don't know if it's true or not, but they say a legend about the Kedushas Levi, the Barditchever, Rav Levi Yitzchak Barditchev. So it says that the storybooks say that he had someone in his shul who right after Shemona Esrei was completed, the Kedushas Levi went over to him and he gave him a big hearty Shalom Aleichem. The person didn't understand what exactly this was all about. The Kedushas Levi, you know what, he didn't see me here, I was here the whole davening. Why is he giving me a big Shalom Aleichem after Shemona Esrei? So Rav Levi Yitzchak Barditchev explained to him, because it's clear to me that in the middle of davening, in the middle of Shemona Esrei, you traveled all the way to Leipzig, you were traveling to Berlin, your mind was in all these other places, you were thinking about all the things you have to do and about all the business ventures that you have to be involved in. And he said, so now that you landed back, and now that we're up to Kriyas HaTorah, and you're together with us, so now, Shalom Aleichem, it's welcome back, it's nice to see you back in shul, even though you were here, but you weren't really here. So the Kedushas Levi warns us the same thing that Rabbeinu Bechaya does, that when we're in the middle of tefillah, when we're in the middle of davening, it's a time to be focused only on the tefillah. Our mind shouldn't be in Leipzig, our mind shouldn't be in Berlin, it shouldn't be on Wall Street, it should be where we are right now in the Siddur, and it shouldn't be everywhere else. The Bali Musar offer a mashal about trying to understand the lack of appreciation that we have for the power, for the intensity of tefillah. So they say the following story. They say about an innocent bystander who is walking by in a beautiful community, and he sees that in the distance, very set back from the street itself, there's a royal citadel, there's a palace, there's an unbelievable fortress that has 18 floors on it, and everywhere, you know, he turns from this side of the block, from the other side of the block, and he sees this incredible palace, this incredible estate that is in front of him. And he sees also that on each floor of the 18 floors of this beautiful building, he sees that there's a panoramic view of all the beautiful hillside that is on the landscape of this beautiful mountain. And he's very taken by it. And he starts to ask around, what exactly is the story with this estate? What's the story with this mansion? And people there tell him, yeah, the legend goes, we know that there's a family that owns this estate, that owns this building. And by the way, it's not just the beautiful building that you see. Laden within the building is gold and silver, and there's treasures hidden inside there, and there's riches. And not only in the building itself, but leading up to the building, all the gardens are so beautiful, and there's so much there. There's so much wealth there. It is unparalleled. There's nothing like it in the world. There's nothing like it that we have ever seen. There's nothing that can be compared to this beautiful building. So he starts to ask them, so who does it belong to, and how do they have the money to pay for such a thing? So they start to laugh at him. What do you think? They paid for it? They couldn't pay for it. This was an heirloom. This was an estate that was carried down to them from their ancestors. It's not something they built. They never would have the money to build such a thing. But this is, the family was born into this, and the truth is they are so bottled up inside of their own building, they never even come to see the way the rest of us live. They have no idea what's going on in the world. Everything they need is provided for them there. So this man is conjuring up in his mind, he's imagining what kind of lifestyle they're living. Can you imagine? They probably have golden floors, and they have beautiful beds, and they have beautiful bedrooms and everything. And he's saying, I can't even begin to imagine how much they enjoy life until somebody breaks him the secret and says, well, I just want you to know, the reality is that the people inside are totally oblivious, they're totally unaware of how rich they are, of how much they have here, of how much they should take advantage of what's in front of their face and the estate that's been given to them. This family, somebody tells them, this family was brought in for the first time. When they were brought into the world, they were brought into the ground floor, to the basement, the dark little basement. That's the first floor that they got to, and that's where they remained. It never dawned upon them that maybe they should look up and see what a big building they're living in and how much they can be enjoying life. They're sitting in the dark basement, and that's where they are, and that's what they think. And they think just because they have so much room to run around in the basement, they think that that's good enough. They think that life is very exciting, and they have no idea how wealthy they really are, how much riches are laden behind every brick and every single inch of this beautiful estate. It doesn't even dawn upon them to check. And that, say the Balei Musar, is our perspective as well on tefillah. They say that tefillah, the Gemara tells us, is min hadvarim ha'omdim merumah shel olam. It is something that there are so much riches, there is so much that's laden inside the words of our tefillah, there is so much power inside of the tefillah, so much hidden meaning. And Reb Chaim Balazhner writes in the Nefesh HaChaim, ki be'emes ba'omek pnimios kavanas ha'tefillah. When you try to figure out the depth, the meaning behind what tefillah really is, any tanu yodea adma, we have no way of gauging how much power, how much meaning there is behind every single word, every precious word of tefillah. Ki gamash and isgalelanu, even though all the perushim, all the art scroll, and everything else that we have on the tefillah, mer abusenu harishonim, that the rishonim have expounded upon for us, kadishi elyon van achron, all the rishonim and all the achronim would try to explain to us all the deep meaning behind the tefillah. And he says, the arizal asher hifli vehigdil, lasos kavanos niflaim, that they worked so hard to try to explain to us what everything is all about. Einan be'erech, says Reb Chaim Balazhner, this doesn't even add up. All of those pirushim, all the beautiful insights that we've heard and we've seen on tefillah, einan be'erech av ketipa min hayam klal. It doesn't even begin to be like a tipa min hayam, like a drop in the bucket, like a drop in the ocean of water, of depth, that there is behind these tefillahs. Neged pnimius oma kavanas anshe knes hagedola masaknei tefillah. It is so infinitely complex, the tefillah that we daven. And even though we can read all the perushim and we can understand everything that we have written on tefillah, but still the bottom line, says the Nefesh HaChaim, is we don't even begin to scratch the surface of what tefillah actually is. And therefore we are like that family, the Balei Musar say, who are living in this beautiful palace, who are living in this unbelievable estate, something that we should be taking so much advantage of, but we're just living on the basement. We're living in the ground floor, and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah are sitting down and laughing at us and saying, look at these fools, look how much riches, look how much wealth we've over to them, look at the estate that we left over for them to enjoy and to take advantage of, and there they are, just living in the dark basement, and they don't even have a she'ifa, they don't even imagine, they don't even understand that there are 18 floors above them, and that they're living in such a beautiful estate, and they can take so much advantage of everything that's there. All we're doing is just scratching the surface, living in the small basement. We don't even have an understanding as to how great the tefillah experience really could be. There's an incredible insight of the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav writes in a Sefer on Chumash, when Yaakov Avinu talks about Shechem, he says, I got Shechem asher lakachti miyad ha'emori, that I took from the Amorim becharbi uvekashti. So Unkelis very famously translates there that what does it mean that I took the city of Shechem becharbi uvekashti? Cherev is what? Cherev is a sword, and kashti is a bow and arrow. So Yaakov Avinu, what? He says that he was able to conquer the land becharbi uvekashti with a sword and an arrow. So Unkelis says that what it means is bitzlusi ubibausi. It means that I was able to conquer the land with my tefillahs, with my tzlusi, with my one kind of tefillah and my second kind of tefillah. So it's not really clear what the difference is. Yaakov Avinu says he was able to conquer a city with the power of his tefillah, and he offered two different kinds of tefillahs, and that's the way he was able to overcome the city of Shechem and conquer it. So what exactly does that mean? What does it mean? He offered two types of tefillahs. What are these two kinds of tefillahs? So the Briska Rav explains as follows, and he says very beautifully that there's a great distinction between these two forms of tefillah. He says, number one, you have a tefillah that was instituted via the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And that's the general tefillah that everyone says, regardless of who you are, regardless of what your economic status is, regardless of what your needs might be, regardless if you have somebody sick in the house or not, everybody offers the same nusach tefillah that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah gave down to us. That's one kind of tefillah. The second kind of tefillah is when a person has a bakasha miyuchedes, when a person has a personal, individual need, because somebody is unfortunately sick in the family, because somebody no longer has a job, because we need something that other people might not need, we have a interest in offering a personalized tefillah because it's something that is necessary for us, even though it might not be needed for everyone else. And here, says the Briska Rav, is the distinction between a cherev and a keshes. What's the difference between charbi and kashti? What's the difference between a sword and a bow and arrow? So he suggests the following. He says a sword is something which is inherently dangerous. It's something that in its own, it's destructive. If anyone goes out and touches it, it's so sharp, they're going to get cut. So it doesn't matter if you are a mighty warrior, if you're really proficient at the laws of war and you know how to fight or not. If you're holding a sword in your hand, somebody's going to get hurt. It's going to pierce. It's going to hurt somebody. It's going to be able to do the destruction, the devastation that it was meant to do. And says the Brisker Rav, that's the same thing. The tefillah that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah gave over to us, the tefillah, as we know it, the simple prayer that everybody offers, that is like a sword. That has the power to destroy. That has the power to devastate. That is sharp. That is something that is able to accomplish the goal, even if we might not be worthy, even if we're not that special, even if we don't have so much kavana. All you have to do is have kavana in the first bracha Shemona Esrei. That's good enough. Why is that? Because you're holding a sword. That's the cherev. Person who's holding a sword is able to be bringing about the destruction that they want, is able to bring about the result that they want, regardless of their intent. As long as you're holding the sword, even if you're a young child, you can make something terrible happen. And so too over here, if you use the mechanism that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah set up for us, you're going to be successful. But then there's a further element of tefillah, and that is the keshes experience of tefillah. And says the Brisker Rav, what that means is that sometimes a person has an individual need that is very important to them. And that's not something that fits into the context of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. That's something that you're adding on. That's something that's a personal need for you. That's an individual need for something that you need and other people do not need. And there, says the Brisker Rav, that's like a keshes. That's like an arrow, which means, depending on your proficiency, an arrow is not inherently dangerous. It just depends on the warrior that's using it. If he uses it properly, if he has good aim, if he knows what his target is, he's going to be able to do so with perfection. He's going to be able to hit the target. But if not, if you're not really somebody who knows the rules of war, if you don't really know how to fight, if you're not really a warrior, then the keshes won't do you any good. You can go around with a bow and arrow all you want, but nothing's going to happen. If you don't know how to aim, you're not going to hit the target. And so too over here, says the Brisker Rav, that kind of tefillah, that aspect of tefillah, which is offering my own personal bakasha, that really depends on how much tchusim I have, on how worthy I am. If I'm a warrior that really deserves to have my keshes hitting the target, then I'm going to be able to make it. But if not, if I don't have that great tchus, if I don't have that great kavana, if I'm not really serious and sincere about my tefillah, it will not be able to work when it comes to an individual, to a personal need, because that's something that has to be very much directed. And here, perhaps, lies the understanding in the Gemara. The Gemara says in Baba Basra, someone who has a chola besoch beso, somebody who has somebody who happens to be sick in their own home, in their own family. So it says, Yelech etzel chacham v'yevakesh alav rachamim. You should go to the chacham and ask that he should offer the tefillah on your behalf. Why should you go to the chacham? We don't need intermediaries. We don't need other people to talk to the Ribono Shel Olam instead of us. Why am I not good enough? Why can't I offer my own tefillah? What is the chacham going to do that I cannot do? The Brisker Rav explains the answer is because here, the Gemara is describing a situation where you have a chola besoch beso. You have somebody who's sick in your own home. So it's your personal need. It's not something that's the general context of what Shemona Esrei is that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah set up. You have a personal and individual need, and there, says the Brisker Rav, is the experience of the keshes, where you have to have good aim, where you have to know where the target is. If you're not the chacham, if you're not the tzaddik, if you're not the person who really knows how to have a sincere tefillah and to ask for that with a seriousness, your tefillah might not be accepted. And that, says the Brisker Rav, is the two very different experiences of tefillah that we have. On the onset of our daily Shemona Esrei, we say, Hashem sefasai tiftach. We say, based on the Gemara Brachas, that the Ribono Shel Olam, on a simple level, we quote the Pasuk in Tehillim, that the Ribono Shel Olam should open up our mouths. We are so inadequate, we're so unprepared for the tefillah, we ask that you should open up our mouths, kaviyachol, so to speak, that you should do it for us. You should allow us, ufi yagati lasecha, allow us to express ourselves to you. So Rav Asher Weiss once told me that perhaps there's a little bit of a different interpretation as to what this means, not just on the simple level that you should open up our mouths and allow us with humility to speak in front of you, even though we're bashful, even though we're embarrassed, even though we don't really know how to do so. But Rav Asher Weiss suggested maybe it means something beyond the simple understanding. Rashi writes on that pasuk in Tehillim, Hashem sefasai tiftach ufi yagiti lasecha, says Rashi. Listen to the words. Hashem sefasai tiftach, says Rashi, what does it mean, open up my lips, open up my mouth? Mecholi, I want you to forgive me. V'yieli pischon peh lahagiti lasecha. Once you forgive me, once you absolve me of all of my wrongdoings, then my mouth will be able to offer you the prayer. Then my mouth will be able to offer you the tefillah that I so much want to offer. So Rav Ashi suggested that maybe what it means is the following. We know that tefillah is something that is patterned off of karbanos. The Gemara tells us that tefillah is keneged karbanos tiknum. And we know that the halacha by karbanos is that zevach rishayim toeva. If a person's a rasha, if a person is unfit, then their karban is also something that is not wanted by the Ribbono Shel Olam. Who wants a karban from a rasha? What does that mean? What kind of relationship is that? And that's the same problem we face every time we daven Shemona Esrei. What is our karban worth? What is our tefillah worth if we're just rishayim inside? Zevach rishayim toeva. The Ribbono Shel Olam says that same mouth that spoke lashon hara today is now going to offer me a tefillah. That same mouth that did all those averes, that cheated in business this morning, that did an unfair deal with somebody else, that was dishonest with their family, with their spouses. That's the person that I want to offer me a tefillah. What kind of tefillah is that? I don't want that. That's a zevach rishayim toeva. We ask at the onset of our tefillah every day, Hashem sefasai tiftach, as Rashi says, mechali al kol pshaai. Before I begin to daven, I ask that you first absolve me of the averes that I have unfortunately transgressed. Make sure that those are a part of my history, that's not really part of who I am. And only then, ufi yageti lasecha, only then, once I have become a perfected individual, will I be able to offer you my tefillah, because my tefillah is no longer a zevach rishayim toeva. We don't want that the Ribbono Shel Olam should look at us as our tefillahs being like the zevach rishayim toeva. We want that the Ribbono Shel Olam should first be mochel lanu al kol pshaeinu, and only then will we have the opportunity to come to Him with sincerity and with the seriousness and have our tefillahs answered again. That's very much in line with what the Brisker Rav explains, that when a person has an individual need, we have to make sure that we are on target, that we're the proficient warrior that's able to shoot that arrow. If we don't have the ability to do that, if we have so many averes that are clouding our vision, that are in the way, then there's no way that we'll be able to present a tefillah that will be taken seriously, because again, that is the perspective of a zerach hashram toeva. Okay, and Mirza Hashem, tomorrow we'll continue a little bit more.